What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Squanch. This is Wisecrack's Rick and Morty podcast. I'm Michael Burns, joined as always by the Squanchers, Ryan Haley.
That was for all the, that was a cloning thing.
Oh, that was multiple clones and decoys.
Yeah,
doing.
At this point, we're five seasons in. It's hard to change up the wubba lubba dub dub every episode, but
no, they'll add some effects in post, which will make it.
Oh, thank you.
Real cool. And our bestest of friends is back, Tommy Cook. Tommy, how are you today?
Well, it's not actually me. I'm actually a copy of a copy of
Fuck.
A copy. So if I say something dumb or wrong, that's the reason why.
That goes for me too. Yeah, I second that.
It's just me. It's the original. I checked my butt stamp, the code inside of there. I made my grandchild look inside my butt, and I didn't fart on him. They just checked my scanning code, so it's really me. Now, today, we're obviously we are here to talk about Season 5, Episode 2, Mortiplicity. But first, I just want to say, Tommy, you were here for the season preview. You're back. How have you been enjoying this season thus far? You know, you weren't here to talk about episode one. If you had any big thoughts about that, you can throw it. How was the first episode?
I thought the first episode was a solid, like, season premiere, very sort of classic Rick and Morty episode. But I think this episode is, you know, something else entirely. I think that this is not only a great episode, I think it's the best episode in potentially a couple of years. I think it's up to season one, season two standards. Well, I think this episode is that good.
Thank God we didn't waste you on week one. Yeah. And now you're getting to bring this energy now. I would have been devastated. We got the guy who's here. So we can just jump right into it then. Let's get everyone's initial reactions to the episode. And you know what? You already started, Tommy, but let's keep going with this. You liked it a lot. Say a little bit about why.
Well, I think it's both the funniest episode of the season. I also think it's the deepest episode of the season thus far. Oh, I mean, it's two episodes, but I think it's one of the deeper episodes they've done. I think it explores like theology and man's relationship to God in a weird and different way than the show has done in the past. And there's also a strong sort of emotional reveal to the episode as well. It's just a wonderful episode. I can't wait to talk about more about it.
Wow. Ryan, what did you think? Initial thoughts on this one?
Dude, I love the shit out of this episode. Yeah. It's amazing. It's a masterpiece. It's incredible. Whatever, all the adjectives. It's so fucking good. And yeah, talking about it being the funniest, which is, as you know, the most important quality for me, how funny is it? You know, because a lot of the episodes that I think are the most dense and intellectually sound are also, to me, sometimes I don't laugh for minutes as they're setting shit up. However, I was like 4 minutes into this episode, 5 minutes in, I'm going, this is the most dense amount of jokes and the most quality laughs and per second of any Rick and Morty episode I can, like you said, in years probably, and probably up to the stuff of the first episodes. So I was just pausing it at 5 minutes in going, holy shit, this is awesome. I really hope it can live up to it. And it did. It was like such a crazy episode. Like the story is amazing and how, I guess we're going to break it down beat by beat, but I loved every turn of it, especially once you know where it's going, and then it still goes there, but it still takes funny turns along the way. In Rick and Morty ways, it's amazing.
Well, you both liked it, and I liked it too.
Plus. Unanimous circle jerk episode. Let's do
it. This episode. This is the point where if you just hated the episode, either stop now or just prepare to be pissed at us for the next hour. But I loved it, and something I love so much is like when you kill the whole family 30 seconds in, I know it's gonna be good. Like, I know you're going for it if right off the bat, and we'll get more into this as well, but like when the first real line of the show is, we're going to kill the Christian God, I'm already like, what is happening? And then 2 seconds later, everyone's dead. It's just like, giddy up, baby. Let's go. So I was, very excited. And I was telling Tommy before we started that, you know, in getting ready for the Squanch and maybe other things we're making about this episode over at the Wisecrack Mothership. I've watched the episode a few times since last night and every time just liked it more and more. I might watch it again later tonight just because. So
I've only seen it once.
Yeah, well, I'm psyched we're all in it. Let's do a recap and then we will break down a lot of the deep and fun and weird ideas here, okay? So here's our recap. We open with the whole family around the table talking about Rick and Morty's current mission, which is killing the Christian God, quote unquote, mob style. We're going to whack his ass because he's been sleeping for thousands of years. But before they can actualize this deicide, they're blasted to death by a group of alien enemies called the Squids. Now cut to another version of Rick Morty and the family, currently playing with their friend, Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted, when we learn that the family we saw murdered were in fact decoys that Rick has created and placed around the country in the wake of the trouble with Space Beth. And then they too were hunted down and murdered by the Squids. We then catch another seemingly non-decoy version of the family who immediately get murdered before jumping to Rick and Morty watching Wenwolf on TV, who then also get murdered. We cut to a version of the family as they show up at a decoy house. Rick is able to freeze them in place. It seems like maybe we're with the real family, but alas, they find a decoy factory in the house. They leave to track down more decoys, and soon there's a shootout between three different sets of decoys. Until they're all burned to death by another family of decoys with a Rick that explains they're caught up in an Asimov cascade, where decoys have started making decoys to protect themselves from decoys while they're killing decoys, and now we're in a Highlander rule situation. 1986, check it out. The gang dresses up as squids to take out their enemies, but learns that the squids are actually other decoys, and then they get killed too. Next, a group of decoys in a spooky wood gets darted by an ugly monster Rick, who was created far down the decoy chain, who wants to skin the family to help his own monster decoys look more human, but they're rescued by a Pinocchio-esque family of decoys who take them to a secure bunker full of decoys brought into the world by an unloving god who are working together. But you guessed it, they get murdered as well. Next, we see some decoys talking about their bucket list in the ocean. They get blasted to death by what seems to finally be the non-decoy family, who does something drastic, brings all the decoys together for a final showdown. Finally, one family stands victorious for about 5 seconds until they're all murdered by Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted. And before we get to the credits, it turns out the real family was in space the whole time on an adventure with Space Beth. That was the episode. And we get a great after-credit scene with Wooden Jerry going through the seas of time. And we could maybe get into that later because I think it really connected to the episode in a great way. That was maybe my favorite after credit scene in quite some time. But that's the episode. We all like it. Let's get into it. And I you kind of started talking about this, Tommy, so maybe we'll start with this, but we can jump around. The episode starts, we said this before, the first big line is we're going to kill the Christian God. Then they kind of get killed, and we might think they're going to move away from that theme. But you said, Tommy, you noticed some heavy theological themes throughout the episode. What stood out to you in that regard, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, yeah, this is only the day after, so I would say I'm 80% there right now on this.
80's great. But, solid B-.
But I think, yeah, I'm a B-. This is going to be a B- theory, okay? I like to preface. So if it's like slightly better than a B-, then you'll think good.
Yeah, set standards low.
I set the bar very low. This is copy of a copy, Tommy. But I think in general, the episode is sort of about, you know, man's relationship to his creator versus creation. There's a very common saying in sort of Christianity and a lot of religions that we are like created in God's own image. Usually that's sort of meant sort of spiritually, sort of like there's some sort of intrinsic godliness within you. But I think this episode sort of literalizes that concept, where Rick has created literal versions of himself as these decoys, to the point where, you know, the line between sort of, you know, creation and creator are so blurred that you can't even tell the difference between the two. There's no way to tell the difference between who is God and who is one of his creation, to the point where, like, it almost doesn't even matter. It becomes a moot point. And this is sort of juxtaposed against all the Ricks who are so certain that they are the creator, that they are the God themselves. And to prove this, they need to kill every single person that isn't them, that is a decoy, that isn't a God. I watched that and I can't help but think that about all the sort of religious wars. You know, insert your sort of choice of religious war, where everyone thinks that their God is the right God. And to prove it, they're going to kill everyone else. I think sort of basically this episode boils down to, it's about there is a creator, but we can't know who he, she, or it is, and sort of juxtaposed against our humanity's need to know who this creator is and why that sort of spells our doom continuously throughout history. So that's my
wow. That was great. That was better than deep. B. That was better than B. Yeah, and I do think, along with what you said, did just add a little bit. Hadn't thought about it until you said it, but it does make me think of, like, the, you know, in the Old Testament, we have Old Testament God who occasionally murders a lot of his own creation to reassert his dominance in the same way that those who think they are the creator in this episode feel this compulsion to kill their created to reaffirm their power as creator. So heavy Old Testament energy in this one. And I think that's the connection you make as well with, you know, this connecting to society's history of war centered around religion. You know, we ended up making a video over at Wisecrack last week exploring an idea from episode one about the nature of war and this necessity of like people picking an outsider in society and how Morty ended up creating a civilization of war in the Hoovy people. It's kind of interesting that we went from that in episode one to here exploring the way that religion, belief, creation, faith affect society in that way.
I mean, this show has a very bleak view of the history of humanity in general. History is not progressing on this show.
I would throw out too that it's funny, like the one religious thing that I was thinking about during this show was, I think I've even talked about this on the Squad or Show Me the Meaning or something before, but like Jethro Tull had this album cover that I read in like when I was like 15, and it said, God was made in man's image or something like that. Or man made God in his own image. Yeah, I think that was the quote. And then I just sat there like holding that going, oh my God, like literally it broke my brain because I was, you know, like grew up in this religious household. I'm like, oh my God, I never thought about it like that. But Rick specifically, you know, who claims to be God in this thing, you're literally watching somebody who is, for all purposes, a god at war with himself. It's like, it's literally like a Greek mythology situation almost, where it's like clones of gods fighting each other, trying to outwit each other. And yeah, it was very biblical and epic in its scope. And I thought you laid it out really nice, Tommy.
Yeah, that's amazing. If someone had told me today we were going to talk about Jethro Tull on this podcast, I would have said today is going to rule. So that's amazing. And that Jethro Tull thing makes me think there's a dead German philosopher, Ludwig Feuerbach, who kind of famously said the secret of theology is anthropology. And his whole idea was, yeah, all of theology and religion is humans projecting things about themselves onto a divine thing. Like taking all these things and tensions and anxieties and weird stuff about us and externalizing them. And I do think Rick and Morty in general, and this episode in particular, do a good job of getting at that tension we have as humans and the way we relate to magical gods in the sky. But I mean, I think too, if everyone's friend from Show Me the Meaning, Austin Smith, was here, he would like this too much. So never let him listen to this. But one of his favorite, thinkers, writers, dead French guys, Jacques Lacan, the psychoanalyst, kind of famously said, you know, God isn't dead, God is unconscious. And when we think that God is dead and we're kind of in control, we're often just like replicating this godlike behavior that shapes who we are. And I couldn't help but thinking about Rick, someone who is like ultimate death of God guy, right? Science and rationality all the way. No room for sort of faith, mysticism, whatever. But what does he do? Literally acts like God. And not God in like some radical, badass science way. He like creates people that then war amongst themselves that he then has to extinguish in some cases. Like it's just literally replicating that. And it even made me think of like the be fruitful and multiply thing. The decoys making decoys.
I mean, he literally says he's God at one point in the episode. Like one of the mm-hmm. other Ricks says, I'm the genius. I'm the best man or something. He says, well, I'm a fucking God. That's and you're creating my image. I think is the actual line that he tells them.
I think that was the last Rick standing who said that before Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted took him out. Any other thoughts on the religious topics we saw explored in this episode? Or do we feel like we've covered that one adequately?
Mine was, I think, even just tangentially related to religion. But yeah, I'll just say, I mean, like we clearly at the end have no idea if the Rick and Mortys are the same Rick and Morty, the original Rick and Mortys, right? I mean, which obviously is a thing. But that, to me, there's a religious, I don't know, if you want to call, simulation theory and stuff, you mm-hmm. know, like, yeah, which I highly subscribe to. So, you'll never know. Even if somebody could prove to me that simulation theory is real, it's like, okay, well, you'll never be able to do that ultimate proof that you're in the final reality. You'll never be able to ultimately prove that you're not the decoy or that you are the original. I just think that's an interesting theological,
conundrum that we are all in right now, presently, while you're listening to this podcast.
And then it involves a level of faith, because I feel like now I'm either going to have to watch every episode being like, are these decoys, or just have faith that this is the one true Rick, no other Rick than this Rick. I also do love that they were floating around in space. So, like,
also, who gives a shit?
Yeah, oh, for sure. But I did like that final moment, too, that, like, while the creation fights on Earth, the god floats in the heavens above them, indifferent to their suffering. Like, yeah. Loved it. Tommy, what was your final religious thought at the Church of Rick and Morty?
I mean, you say that Rick is an indifferent god. I thought the best part about, one of the best parts about this episode is the emotional reveal that he actually is a benevolent god. He created all these decoys to protect the family that he adores and loves.
That's true.
All this horror that is unleashed in this episode comes from a benevolent act, a benevolent god.
For all the people out there that don't know what benevolent means, remind everyone, Tommy.
Yeah, for those
kind and this is the only time where Rick is kind and caring.
There we go.
Okay, I think it plays against our perceptions of Rick as a selfish dick. That really he's doing this out of the goodness of his own heart.
But that reminds me of the scene. It's like one of the second to last decoy families who are up on the hill watching destruction rain down, and they're in their sort of like Sesame Street overall outfits. And that Rick says to that Beth, you know, that there was like something of Rick in him and there was something good about it. Like he felt this genuine love for his family. And kind of like we said before, you know, being created in the image of the creator, if there was something good or like some real love and care in that Rick that was created in the lineage of Ricks, it does tell us there's something good there, maybe. Or at least implies that.
Even the leather face Rick, the most hideous of all the Ricks.
Yeah.
He says he's only doing it to because he has to protect his family. He's doing it for his family. He's going to get them skin for them.
His Beth was
his
so
image
excited.
Of Rick as the protector of his family. That's his sort of number one purpose. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah, and in the Pinocchio decoys as well. They formed a whole community to stand together against a common enemy, the cruel god that created them. Oh, boy, look at this. Well, this is what a good episode. What else? There's some stuff I have that we could talk about, but what else stood out to y'all in this episode?
Well, I can't believe how many times they really got me. In terms of sucking me in, thinking that, okay, now from now on, we're going to follow this family, you know?
And yeah.
So just from a pure storytelling, like tone wise, and they really, and momentum, like it was like four times where I was like, oh, awesome. Now we're going to, you know, the last 10 minutes, we're going to hang out with these people and we're going to see what happened. Like, no, like this is like a meditation episode on everything we've been talking about, all this, you know, religious stuff. It was kind of like Twin Peaks season or episode 8 that in the Showtime series, where it's just kind of like the whole series just stops and then you get this, you know, with the characters we know, but there's just like this completely other tangential episode that takes a minute to just explore all these other weird shit. You'll have to go watch that episode, but anyway, that's kind of reminded me of that kind of thing. And what'd y'all think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I think like when you're watching Rick and Morty at this point, you're sort of primed for sort of the absurdity of the show.
Right.
So you're like primed for like crazy stuff to happen. But even with this episode, I was continuously sort of surprised by what was going to happen next. When like Leatherface Rick shows up, I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. And then somehow it tops that with ventriloquist dummy Rick and Morty and the family. Like it's constantly one-upping itself to an absurd degree.
And so impressive that, like, as the audience, we care every time. Because there's a universe where it becomes disposable, and from an audience perspective, why do we give a fuck anymore if we know you're going to kill them in 90 seconds? And yet, I felt invested every time. And I continued to care about these characters for some reason, which made the episode that much more satisfying. And of course,
well, yeah. I think a big part of the some reason is how relatable the idea of I don't know if I am truly myself. If I'm a copy of a copy, you know, I don't know. How can I prove it? I can't. What, you know, it's like, and then seeing every one of these characters get put in that situation sometimes repeatedly, you know, or it's really funny and to me it never gets old, you know.
Yeah. And that's just that interesting question too of like, we're exploring identity and this idea, you know, like, are we just the collection of our memories? So if I take my memories or thoughts and transfer those into another body that looks just like me, is that me? And I think, you know, it's one way to think about it, but like, they show some change and progression too. They show how like, even down the line of decoys, there's like growth and change, not to be a hippie about it, but it's sort of like as humans, like in a sense, are we literal decoys? No, but are we products of literal other humans that give us their encoded DNA, raise us in a certain environment that normally replicates the environment that they were raised in? And sometimes that can feel like this prison, but is there room for novelty and growth within that? Sure. And I just found that nice. Once we started to get to those who were a little bit, not to use the terms of another show that's out right now, but like the variance amongst the decoys, I found really nice.
So would you argue that this episode is nurture over nature then?
I think there was a little bit of that. I think there was a little bit. Going to be honest, it convinced me a little bit. Because we saw some difference. We saw some genuine difference for both good and bad. In how the Ricks and the family can develop. Go ahead, Ryan.
I felt like it was pretty solid nature. It's just, yeah. What are you programmed, you know? And how, like just how the starting out programming, yeah, you can change a little bit and adapt to your surroundings, but it's definitely comes down to, what were you programmed?
Oh, yeah, y'all are right.
That's the message I get. No, I see where you go. I see where you were thinking too. I think we're both right. We're both right.
Yes, I agree. Totally nature. Only an idiot would say nurture. So we'll just put that back in there. Had either of y'all heard the phrase Asimov Cascade before this episode?
No.
Had anyone?
I've literally never heard. Yeah, no, I've never heard. Is it actually a thing, or did they create it for the show?
Well, you know, because this is a serious endeavor, I did the work of Googling Asimov
Thank you.
Plus Cascade.
Well, you are one of the hosts. Hey, I'm not the guest, so.
Listen, did I sleep last night? Host. No, I'm up. I'm researching. I'm doing the work. There was like, I found a book that had the word Asimov and Cascade on a similar page. So I think that was an idea they made up, but I think the thing does come from this idea of like robotics and the creation of sentient beings, that eventually things can get out of hand when digital things can replicate themselves. So I think that there was something to that logic, and I did enjoy Rick's whiteboard presentation kind of explaining that leading up to the Highlander moment.
It's like the movie The 13th Floor with Craig Bierko.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I know. What a deep cut. The hit deep. 90s film. Everyone thinks The Matrix. I'm going with The 13th Floor, where Craig Bierko stars as a scientist I guess he's a scientist? I don't really know. He creates an artificial reality that mimics our reality. But of course, that reality also has their own virtual reality within it, and so on and so forth. And so the question of, am I living in a virtual reality?
That's what I've been warning us all about, people.
We're in some future Harvard nerds sophomore thesis project. We're in a culture created in a lab someplace. I accept it for what it is. You know, I hope he gets a good grade for us.
I just like, I'm going to be pissed off if like my life literally began like yesterday or something and they just turned it on and all of these Squanch episodes were just programmed, you know, like I don't know if I was here yesterday or a week ago. That's what pisses me off, Mike.
I've been thinking about this a lot though, because this show makes me think about that. I've thought about that with another show that's currently airing on Disney Plus that's created by a former Rick and Morty writer. So I think it's not shocking that, guys, I'm talking about Loki, okay? I am talking about Loki. People get contentious about Marvel stuff. It is interesting, though. I have been thinking about this. We can talk about this another time, maybe. Maybe we'll do a mid-season episode on this. I just think it's interesting that Loki, the showrunner, is a former Rick and Morty writer, and I'm seeing some thematic similarities, is all I will say.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah,
a slightly more popular reference than The 13th Floor. Good job.
Slightly, yeah.
You told me this morning we were talking about The 13th Floor. I would have said this is going to be an awesome day.
Guys, we got deep cuts. We got callbacks. I'm curious what people thought about this. We talked about last week. I think we asked the question on the podcast, what happened to Space Beth? You know, or the Beth clone. We saw her at the end of season 4. And last week we kind of thought, well, maybe that doesn't matter. Hard reset, whatever. What did we think about that? Seeing her with the family at the very end of the episode. I didn't expect to see that. I found that kind of exciting. I also liked the kind of slight F you to the audience that was like, yeah, they were on an adventure with Beth the clone. Wouldn't you love to see it? But you don't get to. But how did you guys feel seeing Space Beth show back up?
I liked it. I mean, I think the episode plays a lot with like what the audience wants to see and yes. then undercutting it constantly. Like yes. there's like a, where Rick and Beth have their heart to heart, and it turns out maybe that they aren't the real Rick and Beth. Yeah. And then there's a point where I think like Rick is about to explain what happened to Beth's mother, and then immediately they get killed yes. or it cuts out. And so I think they're very keen on what the fans want to see, and then sort of giving you the middle finger in the classic sort of Rick and Morty fashion. But I did like seeing Space Beth.
It was good seeing her.
Yeah, in terms of all the different ways they could have talked about the cloning, which we discussed in the preview episode, I mean, this was the best. This is the most Rick and Morty-est way. It was something I never mm-hmm. saw coming, but I'm completely satisfied. With how they're dealing with all the cloning situations. I love that I just have no fucking clue, and that's fun and fine, and it's great.
Yeah. Well, speaking of characters that popped up in this episode that made one excited or think what the fuck is happening, what do y'all think about Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted and the pivotal role that he played in this one? As Rick said, did we tee you up? What did we think of that fun friend?
I loved him. He was hilarious. I mean, he has to be related to Mr. Poopy Butthole, right? They share very similar, I don't know, physiques, I thought, and voices.
Yeah, maybe a similar genus.
Am I wrong? Yes, they probably have similar penises.
I said genuses. Grow up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misheard you. Yeah. We're remote here.
When I was doing my research, I did not have time to Google Mr. Poopy Butthole plus Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted. I did fall for it like a mark, though, where my brain was kind of like, did they set this up and now I didn't get it or I missed it? And of course, like, Rick mocks the audience for having that expectation in his dying words right there. But I just thought, like, what a great way to bring it all to an end, to have the one that brings the entire cascade of decoys to a stop, which is Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted saying somebody should have hunted me.
I love these like minor characters whose entire existence is based on one single thing. It's a totally random thing usually. And here it's, I just want to be hunted. And nobody's hunting him. And so he sort of has an existential crisis. And then that causes him to lash out in profound ways at the people who should be hunting him.
Yeah. I mean, if you're created to do one thing and you are unable to do that thing, you know, what happens? And I think Mr. Always Wants to Be Hunted has a certain like existential similarity to many of the decoys who are just struggling with their created purpose and their
Mr. Meeseeks.
And Mr. Meeseeks, yeah. Wow. They should do a spinoff show with just all these characters. And anything else from this episode? I mean, we're breaking down a lot of good stuff. We all like it a lot. Anything else that stood out to y'all, things that you wanted to talk about for season 5, episode 2?
Obviously, we got to talk about how, you know, it begins with Morty just nonchalantly saying they're going to kill the Christian God.
Yes.
And then it ends with Jerry literally being nailed to the wooden cross new Jesus in the future. I mean, you guys break down the meaning of that for me, please. Well, seems like it's ripe with it.
I'll just say real quickly, and Tommy could explain the whole meaning of this thing. But I mean, I just did like the idea that I think throughout the episode we're seeing the repetition of religious structures kind of implying, and we do get this in a lot of psychoanalytic thinkers, this idea, and kind of like the Lacan thing I brought up earlier, that God and religion are these unconscious structures that we are just repeating as a society, even if we think we move beyond it. So the idea that like they're doing the Jesus thing again, I was just howling when we got to that moment. I'm not mocking, you know, the crucifixion, but just like the fact that they got there. Tommy, what'd you think of the after credit scene connection to the full episode?
I mean, the only other thing I would potentially add to that is that, you know, dummy Jerry is in his own strange way, an immortal being who else is an immortal being? A God, a creator.
Rick.
And he is periodically waking up and seeing the horrors of mankind happen throughout history, and oftentimes he's above them. He's in the bar above the crocodiles, I think, or whatever, yeah, whatever they are, and he's above when there's the next crucifixion. This thought of this whole episode is about man's creator and creation, I think, and everyone wants to be the creator, and in this sort of coda, it's like, why would you want to be the creator? You just wake up periodically from your nap and see the horrors beneath you continuously, and you just want it to end. You just want to die. I think that's the darker.
And I think it's really summed up. I think everything you just said is like almost like the thesis of the film is summed up in that cover, that awesome cover, that like what 80s song, "Who Wants to Live Forever." You know, it's like, yeah, who wants to live forever? You want to end up like Jerry here, like suffering, literally being nailed to a cross with Jesus
in the future? But how well put that, like, Rick wants to be a god, Jerry gets to be one, and it sucks. It's a horrible existence. And you think about that too. Like, I remember once being at maybe Sunday school or something, and they were describing what heaven was. And, you know, you're a kid and you're kind of like frame that. And I remember like a priest or some educator said to me something to the effect of, like, you know, in heaven, we're there for eternity. You'll never die. And we'll just constantly be praising God, just constantly. Now, not to mock anyone that thinks heaven sounds cool, but I remember thinking as a kid, like, oh, that sounds kind of rough. Because what it sounded to me like was, you're just going to be in church forever, and it's never going to stop. And it was just like, are there like breaks? Is there pizza? Is there a rec room? But that idea of like eternity being a curse unto itself, like, how much would that Jerry in that coda have loved to have died? But the curse of immortality, the curse of having that omnipotent thing, just like makes life terrible. So kids, if you were thinking about becoming a god, don't.
You probably are one, though.
Yeah.
In the future, someone's gonna be listening to this, going, "I'm a god. I created a whole sentient simulation on my computer, on my iPhone today, and then I killed them at because I didn't feed them like a Tamagotchi, but real life."
There's a movie that just came out, a documentary called "A Glitch in the Matrix," that sort of examines people who think they're living in a simulation and think that they are, amazing, in a way, their own gods. It's sort of the darker, kind of crazy implications to that.
I want to watch that. That sounds awesome.
Well, if you happen to currently be, I don't know, in your own matrix, if you are constructing a society right now at a small molecular level, if you found a way to break through space and time through some sort of wormhole to create your own reality, we'd love to hear about it. So email us at squanch@wisecrack.co or call us at 213-534-8807. Or alternatively, if you want to tell us what you liked about this episode, if you want to jump in on the conversation, if you want to let us know what you think about some of the stuff we've been bringing up, if there's stuff we've missed, if there's things you think we could look at differently as well, if you have a background in animated-based theology and want to jump in here, same to you. So squanch@wisecrack.co or 213-534-8807. We got some emails, fellas, so I'm going to read these emails out, and we can see what we have to say to our friends who got in touch with us. We love it when squanchers get in touch. So this first one's from Gabriel. Says this: "I love your guys' podcast, and I always listen in to hear what you guys think, and if you've noticed things I might have missed. One thing I noticed about the season 5 premiere episode is that there is a possible time plot hole. It happens when Morty is trying to save Jessica, and they drum through the portal together, only to then be grabbed by a sci-fi robo-arm. At this point, both Morty and Jessica, with part of the robo-arm, are suspended in their own dimension, while Morty calls out for Rick's help. As Rick is arguing with Mr. Nimbus, who controls the police, time should be passing by in the Whovy dimension more quicker than in Rick and Morty's dimension, but after Morty and Jessica, along with Rick, get pulled back by the robo-arm, it seems there was no large time skip. You can tell because the background is the same and the robot hadn't changed either." I'll be honest, I didn't think about that. I didn't think about some of the time inconsistencies with the door in the Whoviverse.
Got him.
Yeah. I mean, if you're between spheres, is there a loophole there? You're like in between the door.
Maybe there's like some type of time-space suspension where one can't simultaneously be in two different layers of time because it would rip you apart or something.
Or yeah, because then you, like if I'm halfway through the door for like 5 minutes and then all of a sudden my legs are shriveling up while my chest is getting normal, that'd be fucked up.
What if you had a baby and you held the baby there and shoved his left arm in, and left it for a while. And they got this baby with this giant old hairy arm and just dragged it around.
A half Benjamin Button.
Oh, you could half button. Or you could put the head through, just the head. And then the baby would be like a real life boss baby type thing because the baby would have an adult head.
Oh, dude, so many implications.
Okay, so we'll look into that. But Gabriel, truly good question. Did not think about that. We found a plot hole. We're done with the show now. Just kidding. Isabel.
Oh, fuck it.
Wrote a great email as well. So Isabel had this to say. I mean, it's Isobel. Hopefully I'm saying your name right. Said, I've just finished your episode on Mort Dinner Rick Andre and really enjoyed it, but wanted to bring up another point about Jessica. During her suspended in-time monologue, she says, had I lived? Was I just the object in another story? Was that all I ever was? Could I be more? I think this is such a meta line, as Jessica is seemingly becoming aware that up until this point, she was literally just, she's just been an object in Rick and Morty. Over the past four seasons, Jessica had minimal character development, yet remains a central character as the girl Morty is chasing. I'd be interested to see if this season we see Jessica transformed from just a prop for Morty's horniness to a fully fleshed out person. You know, I'll start with you, Tommy, because you weren't with us last week to talk about that episode. What did you think about? I guess you can respond to this email and in general. What do you think about Jessica's arc in episode one?
I think it's the best use of Jessica that they've had. I agree with the email. Finally, they gave her something to do where she wasn't just the object of, you know, Morty's affection. I don't know how much we'll see of Jessica as the season progresses. I don't know what it's a strange thing where like she isn't the main character, and so how do you put her into stories where they don't necessarily involve sort of Morty's ogling or objectification? How do you give like Jessica her own agency in a Rick and Morty show? I guess would be my question. But I do love the thought that now she's like. I hope when she does appear. It's a totally different Jessica than sort of, I guess, the somewhat, I guess, vain, I would say, or sort of cavalier version that has been in seasons past.
Yeah, that's what I think, too, is that hopefully she'll come back and be like, you know, it's like she's self-aware now. She knows she's just this side character. And so it'd be funny if, you know, this is just me writing an episode now, but like if she's in the show doing her own side plot that has nothing to do with the Rick and Morty family, but then it just becomes like the Jessica show because she's now like, well, I'm not going to be a side character anymore. I'm taking this shit over, and she takes over.
I want the Jessica the Time God spinoff show. I'm all in on that.
Yeah.
In the pre-show episode of this, Michael, you pitched what if we focused on a totally separate character other than the Rick and Morty family? I mean, maybe a Jessica.
I would love to see that
episode. Yeah.
What's it like for her to go back to school to have dinner with her parents after all she knows now? Like, what is that like? We did real quick in response to the last email. Oh, go ahead, Tommy. If it's on the Jessica thing.
Well, I was gonna say maybe she's a lot like a god now, right? Like she's like dummy Jerry. She's lived and seen centuries happen right in front of her eyes. You've seen. Cities topple and burn continuously, and it's fundamentally changed her. Again, you know, be careful what you wish for in becoming a creator.
Yeah.
or godlike figure.
That's amazing. Quick note from the chat, Forrest Hacker Johnson, to get to our last thing about the time door, he said, or the time difference is removed, all the doors opened. Notice how every time Morty leaves and there's a time difference, he closes the door. Maybe if the door is open, there's no time difference. So that's a good theory there for how the door functions, and that's going to make the baby thing harder because we're not going to want to close the door in a baby's arm. And it's dangerous to do that. Once as a child, I accidentally closed the door on my little sister's fingers, and then one of them snapped off a little bit, and it was a whole thing. Had to go to the hospital. I was very jealous because she got a lot of presents, and I thought to myself, you get presents just because you broke a finger? I'm the one who did it. To be clear, it was an accident. I'm not a monster. Last email. This is from Wage Robot. I'm going to guess that's not a government name, but who knows? Parents do what they want. Wage Robot says, one thing I noticed is the people of the Narnia world are always just about to stop believing in Morty when he comes through the door again. If Morty left them alone for another generation, the problem would resolve itself.
That's what makes it like one of those, it's like a trope from like sitcoms back in the 40s and 50s, right? It's like it's the dinner party scene where, oh shit, you know, we're trying to impress the guests or the parents, you know, of the date. But then there's all this shit going down in the kitchen, and it's like this comedy of errors, you know, where you're trying not to let them, you know, it's like a famous skit. And that's basically what they were doing. You can't, there's always something going wrong in the kitchen. They needed the wine. They needed all the shit and stuff. So
Like, it was a very well-made Three Stooges skit that also, in Rick and Morty fashion, had a lot of deaths and casualties throughout time.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, in our quick take video from last week on that episode, we talked about Michel Foucault and Thomas Hobbes and some of these philosophers who basically will say, even if there isn't a foundational war, society will make one up because we need these myths. We always have to have some sort of primordial war or like boogeyman so that a state or a sovereign has power. So I would say it seemed like some generations did go by and people were starting to be like, hey, we can chill on this. But but the sort of myth of Morty gave power to these leaders, which allowed them to drive society in a certain way. So I don't know. I don't want to get too into geopolitics, but people seem to not just like forget stuff and move on. Sadly, I wish they did. So yeah. But I'll use that as a way to plug this as well. If you haven't checked it out yet, we did put out a video on Wisecrack on season 5, episode 1. We're working on another one this week. We're going to try to do a quick take every week as long as they give us something to talk about. We're not going to force it because we only want to give you that good stuff. So be on the lookout for another one. Before we go, guys, if the email's not good enough, if the phone's not good enough, they need to give a take directly to Tommy, directly to Ryan. Or if they're just like, I like watching Ryan's face here in his voice, I need more of it in my life. Where can they do these things? Tommy, start with you. Where can people track you down, find you online, look at your content, all this stuff?
You can find this copy of a copy at on Twitter at TC4949.
Awesome. Ryan, where can people find just armies of Ryan decoys in digital space? Where are they at?
Ryan Shorts, I just released my Sexy Beasts audition tape. It's on YouTube. You can go look at it right now.
I'm looking that up.
Like for the movie Sexy Beasts?
For
like,
the TV like show on Netflix. Oh, no, not the one with Ben Kingsley.
Okay.
Ben
Kingsley.
This is the new dating show, right? Where people go on dates wearing really intense masks of.
Yeah, Tom, if you haven't seen the trailer for Sexy Beasts, it's a must watch right now. I cannot wait for this show.
It's a lot. I didn't think it was real when I first saw it.
Are you going to try to get on that second season, right?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. And then also, I'm releasing a musical tomorrow, everybody. On the Funhouse channel, Woo Woo the Musical. We have a show called Woo Woo, and I'm musicifying all these comments on the Funhouse channel, and I'm really proud of it, and it's going to be awesome. So if you're watching this, go check that out tomorrow.
Everyone check those out. I know I will be checking those out.
Original songs, yeah.
That sounds amazing. Well, check that out. Find Tommy. Find Ryan. Watch all the stuff. If you want to find me, it's Michael O. Burns on Twitter and Instagram. I am not producing any musicals this week, nor have I for any of the weeks that I've been alive. But maybe one day that would be cool. But we will be back next week. We're going to talk about episode 3. And just as a programming note, because Monday next week is a federal holiday, I think we're going to be a day behind on things. So if you wonder, where is my podcast? Where is my stream? We're respecting everyone's time and letting them take the federal holiday off to, I don't know, eat grilled hot dogs, drink a cold beer, do whatever one does on a holiday weekend. And we hope you're doing the same. So for me, for Tommy, for Ryan, this has been The Squanch. Ryan, do the thing.
Goodbye from Hollywood, California. Fair use prohibits me from singing the final song of the show. Wubba lubba dub dub!